Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're starting out the show today talking about daylilies and why you may want to add some to the new varieties to your landscape. And with us are past presidents of the Wisconsin Daylily Society, Lloyd Ravette and Rhonda Verovin. She is also the past president of the American Daylily Society. So do you have any daylilies in your garden? What's your favorite varieties? Or maybe you want to add some. What questions do you have for our experts? Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Rhonda, Lloyd, thanks so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You bet. So before we start talking about, well, number one, you all have a sale coming up. So we're going to be telling people about that. But why don't you tell us how you got involved with daylilies of all? Rhonda, start out.
So it's actually a funny story, and it's funny that you even ask it. I'm a teacher, mm-hmm. and I took a mental health day. And I decided to go rummage shopping, and I decided to just go to some rummage sales, and there was this sign that said plant sale. And of course, I've always done plants. I actually liked iris before I liked daylilies. And so I was going to go check out this plant sale. Well, lo and behold, she ended up being my very best friend. 19 years later, best friends. And she was talking about daylilies and many other plants as well, because we are involved in a lot of things. But one of the things after we started becoming friends, we became fast friends, was, hey, let's go see this daylily sale. And I said, daylily sale? They have a sale of just daylilies? And she said, absolutely. And we went and I signed up. That's when I joined. I joined 19 years ago.
And the rest is history.
It is. And I'm not a joiner. I'd never thought, but I guess I am. That's how I started with daylilies.
Yeah. And you really joined because you went on to be president of the whole the United States one, right?
The national society.
Thank you. Yes, for sure. What about you, Lloyd?
My story is a lot different. I dabbled around making crosses with some old diploid daylilies, which is, some that I just bought through a distributor. And I started crossing them myself, and I thought, oh, this is a fun thing. And then I went to Sunday in the Park at Obrick one year in June, and they had a sign-up sheet, a daylily club. I didn't know one existed at that time because it was founded in 1990. And I joined in 1996. And the first meeting we went to was actually a region meeting. So we got thrown in right away because we showed up the first day. They had us dividing plants, my wife and I, the first day that the first meeting we went to. That fall, I joined the board and was the treasurer, and the following year I was a president. So, and I didn't even know a lot of the people in the club yet, but the greatest thing about joining our club is the people. Mm-hmm. We have the greatest people. I'm proud of all of the people that when we're prepping for the sale now, we have a crew, it's a whole process. It's like a production line. We have the dividers. We have the labelers. They work at the computers. They make up the labels for the plants after the dividers break them down, and then they go to the people that do the actual putting the labels on the plants, and then they go to the sale tent where the people decide what classification they are, whether they're minis or whether they're doubles and all these different things, and then get them into the appropriate place in the sale tent. And it's we all have fun. People are joking back and forth and kidding each other. So it's just a great group of people.
It's amazing how much work that you all have to put into this sale, because it is. It's like you get these clumps. They're all dirty. And, you have to separate mm-hmm. them. You have to clip them. You have to label them, because it's not like, oh, here you go. Here's some daylilies, because you give them a lot of information. So, Rhonda, talk a little bit about what kind of info people get when they come and buy something at the sale.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because we have a lot of information. So if anybody ever wanted to learn anything about that, any of our members are happy to help with that. Like, that's huge. Education in our club is huge. There isn't a stupid question. Unless you say how many are too many day limits, because that we don't allow that. But truly, information is power. Now, yeah, it takes a lot of work to get things prepped and to have things as informative on each day lily clump that we sell, each set of fans that we sell. So things that they would find would obviously be the name. There is a picture for every cultivar, but not on the baggie. But each cultivar has its own picture, so you know what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Then the hybridizer's name, because we always want to give credit to who the hybridizer is. The year of introduction, so when the hybridizer actually introduced it. Details about color, whether it has things like eye zones or what sort of form it might be, whether it's its size. How many buds it usually has, how many branches it usually has. There's a lot of...
fragrance.
Yeah, there's a lot of rebloom. Like, there's a lot of information on each of the tags. Mm-hmm. And so there really shouldn't be any questions about those sort of simple kind of things. And we call that simple, but it's not simple for everybody, right?
No, right, exactly.
But we make sure that everybody has all the information that they need to be able to make an informed choice that's best for their garden. Mm-hmm. You have a spot you need a tall daylily in, like in a back or maybe in the middle of a berm or something. We've got that for you. You need something up near the edge. We've got that as well. So all the information you could ever want is on each of the labels.
And I went to the Iris sale a few weeks back, and what I ended up doing is I took a picture with my phone of that beautiful picture of the iris, so I knew what it looked like, and then when I bought that particular one, so that when I went home, because I'd forgotten by then, of course, when I finally got them into the ground last weekend, I knew what they looked like and had all that, you know, information for myself. So that's an easy way to do it too. So you have that color picture anyway, especially when you buy a lot.
Yeah, and there is the color picture, and then if you forget, like you didn't have your camera with you, usually people have their phone.
Yeah,
but the Daylily database has all of the colored pictures as well.
Okay. Well, there you go. There you go. So we do have a caller, so we won't let Jerry and Shell Lake wait much longer. But he has an interesting question about daylilies. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, my daylilies were getting out of control, so I circled them with the rototiller, and underneath I found these prolific white roots, and my friend said it's edible. Talk about free food. I said, well, let's learn about that. Can you tell me anything?
I personally have not eaten the roots, but there's actually a cookbook on daylilies that's available. I'm not a cook myself, so I can't really speak too much on that, but I know that, and the flowers are good in salads, and my particular favorites are the yellows. Because I don't know if it's the color that makes me think it tastes better or if it actually really does taste better. But I have eaten the flowers, and they're delicious. It's just like eating lettuce.
Yeah, absolutely. The roots are edible. I've eaten them, especially on the stoloniferous ones. A lot of people, because there's so many roots, people easily get those. They are absolutely edible. And the only part of the daylily that I have not eaten is the leaves. I've had beautiful salads with them. I've walked through daylily gardens and just nibbled on them. And I thought it was the weirdest thing. This gentleman was eating them. He kept grabbing them and just eating them. And I had never eaten them before. And they do. They taste just like a really fresh lettuce. Each color does have a slightly different flavor for sure. But the seed pods were my favorite because they taste like pepper. They are just the most lovely flavored thing, the little seeds. So yeah, they're very edible. Actually, in China, there's an entire a group of individuals that grow specifically so that people can stew them, deep fry them, they eat them in salads, etc. So they grow them for food.
Well, our on-air producer today, Joel Pattenaud, says that the book is called The Delightfully Delicious Daylily by Peter Gale.
Yes, it is.
And, I mean, I was doing some research for the show, and apparently every single part of a daylily is edible, and I had read that you'll never starve if you have daylilies.
So, that's right. I could live for quite a while.
I guess you can. So that's good to know. I heard the buds are really good, too. So
they are.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, thank you for that call, Jerry, and go ahead and indulge. So let's get back to, well, I think one of the things that a lot of people don't realize that daylilies are not lilies.
That's correct. Daylilies are actually Hemerocallis, and which means, in Greek, it means beauty for a day. And they're a completely different species than the bulb lilies. Some of the bulb lilies are toxic, where the daylilies are not. They make good companion plants, actually, because they bloom somewhat at the same time. And July is the main month for daylilies to bloom. They bloom earlier, they bloom later, but July is like the key month. And when you look at your garden in July, a lot of times that is kind of a dead period if you don't have daylilies, because you have your early blooming irises and peonies and all that. And in the fall, you've got your dahlias and asters and chrysanthemums and different things like that. But July is sort of a slow period in a lot of gardens. And what better thing to have color in your garden than grow some daylilies?
Right. And I think that people kind of dismiss them because they're always there, but they don't realize how many varieties there are out there now. They think, oh, those orange, the ditch lilies, which I hate that term. It's just derogatory.
We use it because they do a wonderful job with erosion control.
Oh, my
gosh.
They
really are good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we don't. We really are talking about hybrid daylilies.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And, I mean, just go out there and look. Your website, number one, has some beautiful ones out there if you want to really see the variety out there. So I think we've let people waiting for long enough now. Let's tell them where, when, and how on this plant, this lily sale, this daylily sale. So go ahead, Lloyd.
Yeah, it's Saturday and Sunday this weekend, and it's from 10 until 4. And at 10 o'clock on Saturday, a lot of times we have a line from the tent all the way to the parking lot. But once we open the doors and let people in, we have a very big tent. People are not crowded. It's not like a white sale where people are grabbing each other. You know, it's very cordial, and we have enough room that, if you're in the line, which is like the biggest rush for the weekend, you're not going to be, feel like you're pushed around or anything.
Gardeners don't do that anyway.
And the thing is, we have a few people like myself and a few other members that are knowledgeable that will answer any questions that you might have. And so we try to help people with their shopping so that it fits the purpose that they want. A lot of times people will say, I want a daylily that's like this here. And sometimes, bud count, you look at the faces don't always tell you that, it's only going to have 10 flowers on a stem versus, 20 or 30. And the members there that can help you out can answer that question or show you where to find that on the label.
Okay, so, and it's at Olbrich Park, and that's 3527 Atwood Avenue, which is just down the street from Olbrich Botanic Garden. So if people know where that
by
is.
By the beer tent.
Yes,
the beer tent.
The beer garden, actually. We are literally in the field of the beer garden.
Okay, there you go.
So I guess if you wanted to shop and
drink,
partake, feel free. We don't encourage both together. But
you don't need to park at Olbrich, where the parking sometimes is limited.
Right.
We have, it's pretty spacious parking lot, that should not be an issue.
And how many varieties do you have?
Every year we have, it ranges between 600 and 700. One year we maxed out at about 800.
Wow.
And we found that was just too many at the end of the day. So we did limit the numbers. Mm-hmm. So usually it's between 600 and 700.
Mm-hmm. And how's it set up? So is it like rows that people just walk up and down, or how's it separated?
Yeah, so that's my job. Lloyd gets to do the dividing and all of that fun stuff. And then he was talking about during that prep part, how they bring it over and then people categorize it. And that's a huge undertaking as well. It's categorized by color for the most part.
Okay.
So we'd have our melons and oranges and creams and, you know, purples, lavenders, all of that. But we also have some designated by form. So if it's an unusual form or a spider form, which tend to be longer or have a weird kind of fun, funky form, that is its own category, not by color. And the same is true of the minis. So anything less than 3 inches would be considered a mini.
And that's the flower itself.
The flower itself, not the whole plant. Although we do have a couple plants that are pretty close.
Really?
Wow. Very tiny. And doubles. So any double daylilies, those would be its own designation as well. But typically it's by color because most people want to shop by color, but there are a couple of those forms that it's set apart differently. And we do our best to have things alphabetized, so if you're looking for something in particular, it's easy to find.
Well, that sounds pretty easy.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is fun.
Yeah.
And some people kind of raise their nose at the yellow daylily. I know one of our members, as he was buying a yellow daylily once, his wife said, "You're not buying another yellow daylily." And he says, "Yes, I am. It's a very pretty yellow." and yellow stands out in your garden more. From a distance, yellow and orange will stand out, where red and purple kind of blends into the background. And, you know, I do recommend it. You do have some yellows and some oranges, not the oranges like the ditch lily. We have oranges that are, we have one called Primal Scream that really just screams at you.
Literally.
And there's some other ones that have that type of orange hue to them that really will, you know, from 50 feet away, they just jump at you.
Yeah, so it kind of depends on where you want, where you'll be viewing them, right? So
right.
Brighter colors if you're viewing them from farther away, and you can get those more subtle colors if you're going to be seeing them from close up.
Yeah.
Does that make more sense to think of them that way?
Yeah, yeah. Some of the pretty faces you have to appreciate from close up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of the faces look better from farther away. like people,
like,
right?
I was just going to say, I know humans like that.
Exactly. So if you have a question about daylilies, please give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can email us. It's talk@wpr.org. So daylilies are very adaptable. But what are the ideal conditions for a daylily? If someone was going to say, I don't have daylilies, but can I grow them? So,
well, they can be somewhat drought tolerant, but daylilies really appreciate being watered. If you're able to water them and fertilize them a little bit, they will reward you handsomely because, you know, even though they can tolerate some very poor conditions, just like people, the nicer you treat them, the nicer they are back to you.
So does that mean that they get fuller, they produce more flowers, or what does that mean?
All of it. And some of them will rebloom. Just like irises, there are some reblooming irises, but the trick is, you know, if they have that quality, they need the treatment in order to have that. They need the water, they need the fertilizer. And they'll reward you with a second batch of flowers. And some have what they call bud builders. They keep building more and more buds at the end of a stem. So, and that's probably more common with some of the older varieties.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another good trait of some of the daylilies.
And so, I'd say the one thing that they do need is at least 5 hours of sunlight. So daylilies, in general, don't do great in full shade.
Mm-hmm.
Partial shade you can get away with. Some of the darker colors do better in shade than the brighter colors. But definitely I would recommend at least 5 hours of sunlight as well.
Okay. And the daylilies still, the bloom still only lasts a day? Or have they gotten blooms to last longer now?
So I have a daylily that blooms for a week.
No.
I do. It is copyrighted, so I can't say much about it right now.
Okay.
But yes, we are testing it. Monrovia actually has put it out, and I do have it. Several of us have it in the country, and it blooms for a week.
Wow.
But generally, like Lloyd had said earlier, hemerocallis means beauty for a day. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean you have a daylily, you know, a clump of daylilies,
right,
and it's only one day.
Right.
They keep each flower is only one day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A funny story with that is I was recently on a garden tour. We had our regional, our Wisconsin Daylily Society hosted the regional here, which means that people from all over the country actually came. But we had to prep it the evening before to get rid of all the blooms so there weren't spent blooms for people to take photos. So we had to do what's called live heading, which is taking living blooms off. And my son's girlfriend about fell over when I told her that we had to pull these off. She goes, but they only bloom for one day.
Oh.
You know, it is kind of an unnerving feeling to do that. However, the next day it was full of blooms. It was beautiful. And it's that way for months if you have a true daylily garden. It's not just one day. And I think that's a misnomer that a lot of people think because it's named daylily,
sure,
that it's really a short-lived thing. They bloom for months.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
How many daylilies do you have?
Have you lost count?
I have over 2,000 named varieties and then seedlings. Yes, it's a problem.
Or a good thing, depending on how you look at it, right?
Yes.
What about you, Lloyd? How many do you have?
I've got a few hundred now. Okay. I used to have over 800, but my garden is getting more and more filled with peonies because that's another interest of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am interested in irises, so I grow a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So the daylilies have to share the garden now more than they did in the past.
Yeah, Lloyd hybridizes all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
I only hybridize daylilies.
Okay.
So I have a bigger variety of daylilies because that's more of my focus. I do have a lot of companion plants as well, but Lloyd is an amazing peony and iris hybridizer as well.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Well, again, if we're going to talk a little bit about the hybridization, but before we take our little break here, give us the basics on the show that the sale rather that's coming up this weekend. Go ahead, Rhonda.
So again, at Ulbrich Park, we welcome everybody to come 10 till 4 Saturday and Sunday. And there is something for everyone. We have daylilies that are price range between $6 and $30. And if you were a crazy daylily person like Lloyd and I, you know that those are incredible prices for the daylilies that you'll get, an incredible quality. And you know that they grow well here in Wisconsin because they have been growing here. There are members of our club that have donated them. So you don't have to worry about, am I getting one that's not going to do great here? It might do great in the South. So, you know, come and check us out. We would love to have you come by and pick out some daylilies. And any questions you have, we're happy to answer. And like I had mentioned before, all that information is right there on tags for you.
And our members are the ones that spent the money up front and spent the $50, $7,500 plus for the plants in their garden that they've dug up for the sale now that you're buying at a much better price.
Absolutely. It's a great deal.
Wow, that is amazing. I don't think anybody realizes how expensive they can be.
Hybrid daylilies can be very expensive.
It's obviously. So if you're thinking to yourself out there, $30 for a, you know, one little bulb, that's a lot. No, it's not. It's a really good deal. You take cash, credit card,
and check. We do.
And check.
We take it all.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's wonderful. Good to know. And the profits from this go to?
To our club.
Okay.
And our club does make donations to other nonprofits. We are a non-profit organization, but it pays for things for our members. So it funds an entire year of activities, including many great speakers that come in and teach our members about daylilies or other. We have companion plant people that come in and talk all the time. Wildflower people come in. Lloyd has actually spoke on iris before and many other things as well. We have many things that are for the club. Like, it all goes to our membership. And like I said, then we donate.
And anybody can join?
Anybody can join.
Anybody can join, and you'll find the nicest people when you join a garden club, especially the Daylily Club. We have just a great crew of people. And like the sale is a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun.
Okay. Our guests are past presidents of the Wisconsin Daylily Society, Lloyd Ravette and Rhonda Verhoeven. And we'll be back in just a second with more information and answering your questions. 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. In the second hour of the show today, we'll check in with retired UW Extension Horticulture Outreach Specialist for Pierce County, Diana Allfuth. She has some advice on how to get the most out of the rest of the growing season, so I hope you can stay with us. Right now, we are talking daylilies with past presidents of the Wisconsin Daylily Society, Lloyd Ravette and Rhonda Verhoeven. So if you have questions about daylilies, we can certainly take them because we have the experts right here. Nancy in Appleton emailed to say she knows that we're talking about how hybrid Hemerocallis.
Thank you.
But please inform listeners about the invasive nature of Hemerocallis fulva. The orange daylilies, aka ditch lilies, our native flora and fauna need our help as gardeners so they are not lost to aggressive non-native plants like orange daylilies. They are great alternatives for the garden, or there are great alternatives for the garden that support biodiversity in our gardens, such as butterfly milkweed and orange coneflowers. Listeners may also be interested in native Michigan lily or wood lily. So, Lloyd, you want to address that?
Oh, a little bit. We don't sell any of the fulva or the quanzo at our sale. It can be invasive. There can be good purposes for it, like Rhonda said earlier, to help for erosion problems. But you don't want that in your perennial bed because it's stoloniferous. It spreads like a snake crawling underground and comes up. I don't know if it can cross under a sidewalk, but I wouldn't be surprised if it could. So you really don't want those in your perennial beds. But the ones we have are going to be all, they grow in like a circle. When you plant the two fans or if we get generous and put three or four fans in a package, when you plant those, it's going to grow in a circle as it expands. And the circle takes several years before it even gets big enough where you might want to divide it, give some to the neighbors, bring it into our sale or whatever. And so they aren't invasive at all. The ones we sell do not have that issue at all.
Yeah, I would add that I love what the person who emailed in said, that there are many other options as well, because it can take out native populations. And I do allow butterfly milkweed in my garden. I have a pollinator garden, so I make sure to include all of those things. The pale purple coneflower, all of those things are very important to make sure that we do have our natives. So I do agree 100% with that. I do think having them out in the middle of, you know, you see them along roadways, you see them in ditches. That's why they got the name ditch lily. They do have their purpose, but definitely not in gardens. And if you're trying to do native habitats, to try to dig those out. And it is a hard job. And truly using chemicals is frowned upon in my world because I do native work. But, you know, to get all of those little pieces, it took me years to get rid of a section of it. So I understand the pain and I appreciate that viewpoint because, yes, it is something that you do need to be aware of. And, yes, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about hybrid daylilies. But we do need to bring that to people's attention. Please don't share those with people because a lot of people try to give those away. Please don't do that.
Right.
Yeah, I once planted one in my garden because I thought it was neat to have variegated foliage. And because I had one with variegated foliage, and to this day I'm still finding a piece of it coming up here or there in my garden. So just if you can, avoid ever planting that in your yard.
Yeah.
If you're out in the country and you have a ditch or something, by all means go ahead, but otherwise avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the native ones she was talking about, the Michigan lily or the wood lily? Are those a good alternative, or do they also?
They're not hammer callus, so that would fall under like other true lilies or things of that nature.
Gotcha.
But yes, absolutely, they're wonderful alternatives. Mm-hmm. But they're not hammer callus. Okay.
So is there a native daylily?
No, they're all.
No.
They're all.
The ones that are out are invasive,
mm-hmm.
that you see out and about.
Okay.
And then the ones we have are not native. Mm-hmm. They've been hybridized.
Gotcha. Okay.
They came from things like citrina and different. There's so many different species besides what we call the ditch lilies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of species, and they bloom at different times. Some of them are very, very early. Some of them bloom in May. And it's using some of these other varieties that were crossed to create what we have now as the modern day lily.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we've got a call. Albert in Baraboo, go right ahead.
Hi. Yes. I'm wondering, I have day lilies, and I wonder if I can mow them after they bloom.
Go ahead, Rhonda.
So the answer is yes, you can, but... that's giving them a real severe haircut, right? So I would recommend just taking a loppers and lopping them, leaving about, 4 to 6 inches of foliage just so that they can go to sleep well. If you were to mow them, you could mow iris. You could mow other things. They're just not going to be that happy with you. They want to go to sleep. They take that energy that's in the foliage and they help it go to sleep for the winter when it goes dormant. So I wouldn't recommend mowing it per se. I mean, if you have a big area and that's what you got to do, sure. But if you really want to give it what it needs and you don't want the foliage to be up all year because it could look a little messy right after it starts to go dormant, then I would just recommend using a loppers to lop it. And I have a couple thousand that I do that with. So I know it takes time, but I want to give it its best shot over the winter so that it looks beautiful in the spring.
Yeah, it's good to clean up the blooming stems. And on the outside, some of the leaves will be brown. So if you want to pull some of the brown leaves so that all you're leaving is a nice green foliage, it'll look nicer in your garden without having to give it the severe haircut.
When is a good time to do that?
Anytime after bloom.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you just cut back on the little stem first, the stem that the flowers are on, and then the leaves.
Yeah, if you're not hybridizing, you probably don't want seeds. And there are mm-hmm. some, a lot of the new varieties will not set seed unless you cross them, because the pistil is so far out from the stamens.
Okay.
And they generally, even insects don't pollinate them. The smaller flowers will get pollinated by insects. And if you don't want to grow the seed and don't want to drain the energy from the plant, you should cut those seed pods off and dispose of them.
Okay. So let's talk about hybridizing them. Now, Rhonda, you mm-hmm. do that. Lloyd, you do that.
Yeah.
What's the process like? For regular gardeners, I think we're all like, oh, that sounds scary.
It's actually really simple. Now, plants have both male and female parts. The actual action of hybridizing is a very simple one. You take the male part, which is the fuzzy pollen,
mm-hmm.
and you put it on the pistil, which is the sticky long part on the middle of the flower. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, and the pollen just grows this down to the grows
yeah.
a little string down to the ovaries to make the cross.
Yeah, it fertilizes
that egg.
And
then you get your seeds.
Yeah. Okay. So the process itself is very simple. There's a lot of, once you get going with it, there's a lot to mm-hmm. look at. The big thing that you do need to make sure when you are trying to cross is that you have the ploidy right, which is number of chromosomes. There are multiple types of daylilies. There are diploid ones that Lloyd had talked about at the beginning, and they have 22 chromosomes. We're not going to get too scientific, don't worry. And then there's tetraploid ones that have 44 chromosomes. You just wouldn't want to try to cross a diploid to a tetraploid. You want to make sure you're crossing diploid to diploid and tetraploid to tetraploid. Now, there's some weird things out there, too. We're not going to get into all that crazy. Mm-hmm. But it's a real simple process, and if you have that down, anyone can cross. My son started hybridizing when he was 4 years old. So it's a simple process. Anybody can learn how to do it. There's just a lot to how to then collect the seeds and store it and all of the things that come after. But the process of hybridizing is actually quite easy.
Okay. So you see one bloom that you really like and you thought, oh, I think if we cross it with this one, it would look really cool. You're not really sure what's going to happen, but you try it. And then it sets the seed pod, and then you collect the seed pod, and then you dry it, I'm assuming, right?
Sort and the of seed kind pod of. Is mom, and the pollen is dad.
Okay.
And the proper way of noting that, if you cross one with another, you put the name of the mother first,
okay,
times the mm-hmm. name of the father.
Okay.
And you keep that in your records. You put a tag on it to show what you did when you made the cross. And if you keep good records and everything, if you get a plant that may be introduced later on, you would have the parentage. A lot of introductions, they don't know the parentage, or it's lost, or they use seedlings to begin with, which are unnamed varieties, and then you won't have those names. But it's nice to have the names if possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you grow it from the seed?
Yeah, so typically now in Wisconsin, it's interesting because people in the South can just plop those things in the ground right away.
Like okay.
People have hybridized and had them in the ground already this season.
Wow.
But for us, it's a little bit different. We have to have the seed pods, you know, they dry and you collect the seeds. And then we do something called cold stratification, mm-hmm. which is putting them in the refrigerator a little bit moist, not soaking them. And then in January or February is when I usually pull them out, but March, April could work too. And then I start them in seed trays. Then we put them outside after a while. So
Okay. There's
a whole process to it, you know, and it does take quite a bit here. It's not just like you can't plop them in the ground here. Those seeds will freeze, but you know, there's a lot of little
bits. The magic
bits.
Thing is plopping them in the ground because a seed unplanted will not grow.
Exactly.
And that's the worst crime you can make as far as doing that.
But absolutely.
If you ask us what methods we use, we all do it a little bit differently. But the important thing is to get the seed in the ground so that it can grow.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And Rhonda, you had you got an award for one of yours. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm not a big hybridizer. I am a backyard hybridizer. I dabble is what I say, but I have rigorous standards. So I don't have a large property, and I've got to be careful with the amount of real estate I use. And so I need to be very rigorous with my standards. Mm-hmm. And so if it doesn't have a certain number of branches or if it doesn't have a certain number of buds, I dig it out and throw it away right away. It's called culling. And there was one that I recently had that met my standards, and it was quite beautiful. It had everything it needed. And so I grew it out for a couple of years and introduced it to, it hasn't been introduced because it was in a seedling competition. So we entered it into what's called the Anglerith competition, and I won. So it was kind of a big deal.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. So what happens now then?
Well, it'll be introduced. It'll mm-hmm. have a name and people will be able to purchase it. Yeah.
Do you get to name it?
Yes, I do.
Ooh. Are you going to tell us what it is? Or can you?
So I can.
Okay.
It's not registered yet, so nobody steal this name. but I have multiple sclerosis. And so I'm naming it MS Warrior.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. Well, there's a lot of people out there with MS. So
I know.
Maybe you can use it for some kind of fundraising thing.
Absolutely. I've thought about that.
Mm-hmm. That would be wonderful. So talk about some of the really unusual ones that are going to be available at the sale this weekend.
Yeah, so I think they're unusual for a couple of different reasons. We have some that are splatter colors, which means it looks kind of like somebody just splattered paint on them, you know, different colors. We have ones that are stippled, so it looks like little freckles all over it, which is kind of cool and fun. We have some that have blooms that range, just huge, huge blooms, which could be 10 to 15 inches of length, that we call that wingspan. You
That's
know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have itty bitty ones, which could be as tiny as an inch. You know, we have beautiful doubles. So we have super tall ones. We have ones that I just took care of one that was 44 inches. So, you know, we're talking over, you know, we're looking at 4 feet, which is really huge. We have some that will be there that could be over 6 feet. So I don't want to give specific names because, boy, oh boy, everybody's going to want those specific named ones. But truly, if you like ruffles, we have those. If mm-hmm. you like beautiful big eyes, we have those. If you like a simple, gorgeous, perfect bagel-shaped daylily, we have that as well. So there's a wide variety. There's literally something for everyone.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is just amazing. So many varieties. And like I said earlier, if you're thinking about those, you know, orange little daylilies that you probably grew up with, it's time to enlighten yourself.
There's so much more, you know, and we had talked earlier about Stella d'Oro.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. Stella does beautifully in landscapes. We know it does beautifully mm-hmm. and it reblooms like crazy
yeah.
and it does a beautiful job. Mm-hmm. I grow Stella in my garden because I have what's called a stout metal bed. So all of the ones that have won the greatest honor, I grow those.
Uh-huh.
But I think there's so much more
yes.
than Stella.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't always understand. They think ditch lily, mm-hmm. you know, those orange ones
yeah.
that are invasive. And then they think Stella.
Yeah.
And so those are the ones people typically think of. But when I think of daylilies, I think of the rainbow
yeah.
and
yeah.
a mix in between.
Mm-hmm.
So the only color we don't have is true blue.
Yeah. Well, it could be said for a lot of varieties. So yeah,
yeah, I would mm-hmm. like to be the person that hybridized a true blue daylily. That would be pretty remarkable.
If you could, yeah. Talking about blue, they do have some with blue speckles in them.
Oh, so they're
getting
there.
And there's some that have like a bluish eye zone. But the speckles is the thing that will have to come
yeah.
first before mm-hmm. it saturates the whole flower.
Sure, sure.
And I forgot, there is one that I saw that I know is at the sale. You asked about unusual ones.
Yeah.
We have one that's called a color changer, and it changes throughout the day. It starts out a very beautiful, like, red color and turns into this wonderful, like, creamy purple. It legitimately is one that
wow.
changes color through the day. Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to make sure to say that.
Wow. Wow. I think you'll have people asking for that one.
That's
Be
why
warned.
I'm not saying names.
Yeah, they're going to come in. You know, that one that changes.
And we've got a lot of that, so we're good.
For sure. So, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about the daylilies growing in a circle. How can you tell when you really should be dividing those?
When the circle gets very big, like when it's like maybe a foot and a half mm-hmm. across or
okay.
more, it's probably taking too much space in your garden. And it's not going to probably perform as well as if it was a smaller clump.
Okay. Does it get that dead area in the center like some plants do? No?
That's more with beardless irises tend to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Daylilies don't. They, in fact, the center will have the biggest, hardiest
okay.
clumps. Like one that I grow, Heavenly United, we stand. When you dig that up, the outside fans are almost like small seedlings, where the inside fans are almost like corn stalks. So when we're dividing plants and you run into those, we try to mix it up a little bit so that we give people a big stalk with maybe a smaller stalk or something, so that we don't put two big ones in one and a few small ones in another one. Yeah.
So in your own garden, if you've got somebody listening who has like, oh, maybe I should be digging those up, what's the, when number one, when is the best time and should they replant them right away? How big of a clump should they be replanting?
It also depends on how well you like it. There are some varieties that they maybe only has a half a dozen fans, and they're not welcome in my garden anymore because it's not what, maybe it has a pretty face, mm-hmm. but it only has a bud count of 6. And when I bought it, I didn't know that. So out it goes. And when I dispose of a plant like that, I usually don't bring it into the sale. Because if I didn't like it because it didn't perform the way I wanted it to, I don't want to bring it into a sale and sell it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. I generally bring the ones that perform the best into the sale because if I liked it, I'm thinking that the people that buy it, and a lot of times I help people select things, and I've had people come back years later and say, oh, you talked me into buying this plant, and I'd like them to say that, and you were right.
Yeah,
not that you sold me something that I'm
right.
not happy with.
For sure.
You asked about dividing, like, time.
Yeah.
You can divide daylilies. The best time is after bloom, to
okay.
be truthful.
Mm-hmm.
But I have divided in the spring when I just needed to because I needed that space in my garden.
Sure.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can divide at any time. They're actually really resilient. But at any time after bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say minimum of keeping 6 fans so you keep your clump nice.
Okay.
You know, and then share the rest with
sure.
people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Excellent. Janice emailed to ask why Stella Doro are so popular with contractors who plant public spaces. She said she hates it and says that there are so many better ones.
So I agree that there are so many better ones. And it was one that was hybridized for commercial use. And so that's why it's out there, because it was tissue cultured and it was mass produced, and the contractors were able to get it at a really reasonable price. That's why it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I agree 100% with her that, yes, there's better out there.
And the tissue culture ones don't perform as well as the ones that were just gotten by dividing plants instead of growing
sure.
on from tissue culture.
Oh,
because
sure.
tissue culture does sometimes change the plant
mm-hmm.
in a negative way. And so, you know, if you're going to grow Stella, it would be better to get it from somebody who has the
actual Stella
actual plant,
yeah.
not the tissue culture one.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that question,
that's
Janice.
A great one.
Isaac and Stephen Swan has a great question, too. Go ahead, Isaac.
Hi there. We were talking about the fancy hybridized colors of daylilies that are available and so forth, and that got me wondering. I've tried some fancy, like, coneflowers, you know, that start green, that kind of thing, the new hybridized versions of those. And after a few years, they kind of fade back to their original, like, traditional color, you know, like a purple coneflower, for example. I'm wondering if these new hybridized daylilies with the fancy colors will eventually kind of go back to that, or if they stay, is their hybridized fancy color throughout their entire lifespan?
Okay. So I find that those hybridized echinacea that you're referring to, they do revert. Now, the difference with daylilies, it's truly a genetic change. And so these are one-off babies. So, excuse me, every one of them are genetic individuals. So they do not revert back to what other parentage would be. So they stay true.
I had that happen with one of my echinaceas. I thought I was going crazy. I'm like, I could have swore that was one of those orange ones that came back up pink. And so, yeah, it's disappointing. So it's good to know that the daylilies will not do that. So thank you so much for that call, Isaac. So we just have a couple more minutes. So one more time, information about the daylily sale. Go ahead, Lloyd.
Yeah, it's going to be tomorrow. On Saturday and Sunday from 10 o'clock until 4 o'clock. And you'll be greeted at the door of the tent with somebody that will hand you a box for your purchases. And it'll give you a sheet which explains the labels a little bit, so that if you see a perfume bottle on the label, you know that it's fragrant. They're all fragrant to a certain extent, but the ones that are really especially fragrant, they get a little perfume bottle on the label. And if you see a spaceship, that means that it's an unusual form. So there are some symbols on the labels, and the sheet will explain all of this. And usually have Mike, he mans the one of the mics, mans the door and where you come into the tent, and we'll give you information so that as soon as you walk into the tent, you have some knowledge already of what you're looking for.
Yeah, there's, and, like I said, there's something for everyone, mm-hmm. and it's every age. So it doesn't matter if you're 4 or 400, like, just come and check us out, because we love to have the children come through. We usually throw little things in for kids, you know, just for fun. Everybody gets a freebie. That's something, if you purchase a daylily, everyone gets a free daylily on their way out. They get to choose a free one. So,
lovely.
Yes.
Lovely. All right, again, and that is this weekend, August 15th and 16th from 10 to 4 at Olbrich Park, and that's on Atwood Avenue in Madison. So check it out, and thank you, Lloyd and Rhonda, for being
Thank you very much for having us.
We appreciate this.
This was enjoyable.
Thank you.